Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. You're listening to the Intentional Parents Podcast, brought to you by Intentional. Intentional is all about spiritual formation in the family. We desire to bring biblical hope and practical help. Enjoy this week's conversation. Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today, we're going to respond to your questions on the topic of marriage. We have a handful of questions just right in front of us, and we call these Q&Rs. We said this before, but we'll say it again to remind you. We cannot answer every question, but we can respond to anything. And sometimes you might not even like those responses, so you can take them or leave them. But today we're going to respond to some of those, and just want to say thank you to everyone who's rated and subscribed. Thank you. It makes a huge, huge difference. And if you haven't had a chance to subscribe or hit the like button or leave a comment, please do that, or go over to YouTube if you want to watch all this. That's just a quick FYI. When you're listening to this, you're in summer. This is summertime. And I don't know, life is busy. There's a lot of complexities during summertime, especially if you have kids. All the kids are at home. There's vacations. I don't know about you guys, but tensions start to rise sometimes when schedules change. I have someone in my life who I'm married to. Just one person.
I wonder who you're talking about.
Who thrives on routine. I feel like the closer we get to September and you know routine's coming, you're just like, you like get more excited and full of joy. But the moment summer's starting to approach, you're like, you've already said it, like, oh my goodness, I have to figure out what this is going to look like.
Yeah.
And that can lead to some marital tension.
Very true.
So let's talk about marital tension. Let's respond to some questions. So, when is it appropriate in forgiveness to extend forgiveness in person versus processing it privately? So one more time, what's more appropriate, to extend forgiveness in person or to process some of it privately?
I think maybe the question, when are there scenarios when processing it privately is all that needed?
Yeah. Well, I can answer that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Then respond, please.
Well, I've had to think this through, you know, in preaching. And to me, there's all sin is an offense to God. Okay. He is holy. So, and we forget that sometimes. So, any sin, when we become aware of it, needs to be confessed to God. And there's sins of omission, sins of commission. And sometimes we've sinned and we're not even aware of it. And that's the grace of God is so amazing. He covers it. But there's sin in thought, and there's sin that's action.
Yeah.
So the way I view it is, if I have been thinking, you know, a sinful thought, like about how I really can't stand this particular person, but it's only me thinking about it, then I need to ask God's forgiveness for viewing that person not the way he does. But if I sin against that person, it's not enough to just say, you know, well, yeah, I told Brooke that he's an absolute fool, and I don't really like him at all.
I knew I was the person.
And I think, you know, he shouldn't live on this planet or whatever.
Wow.
You know, I love you. I'm using hyperbole.
I know sarcasm. I get it.
And then I say, oh God, I shouldn't have said that about, but you're just still lying there bleeding because I just told you that I didn't value you at all. I need to go to you and say,
sorry,
will you please forgive me? You know, I've got my own sin that I'm just paying no attention to, and I'm, you know, telling you some things. And so I've sinned against you. And so I think, to me, that's the circle of forgiveness. It needs to be the same as the circle of who I've sinned against. That's how I view it. And sometimes when you have sinned against a person and have dealt with it, if you have a tender enough conscience, that'll keep coming back to you. Mm. And God is so gracious. Usually, mm-hmm. he's not in a condemning way. It's sort of a reminding way. Mm. Remember. And I could tell you a story where I had to ask somebody's forgiveness several years later. Mm-hmm. And when I said, do you remember that time? They go, oh, yes, I remember. Mm-hmm. And I've been waiting for this moment. Mm-hmm. So
that's what they said to you.
Yeah. When I finally did it. And so I don't know if I want to tell the story here on the podcast, but but I think that that was a situation where I had asked God forgiveness for an outburst of anger, but I hadn't asked the person's forgiveness.
Wow.
And yeah.
So I want to flip it though, because this question says it's about this person extending forgiveness. So not asking for forgiveness, needing to receive it, but needing to forgive somebody else. So the person's asking this question from the point of view of having been wronged.
Oh, yes. I took it the opposite way.
I'm curious.
Okay. Both are important. We can respond to both.
Because it's one thing to extend forgiveness when somebody is asking, like you're saying. But what about when the person's not asking for forgiveness? That kind of requires that we forgive privately, right?
Yes, it does.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
If you mean if you don't even know that the person, wait, you know the person, so the person hurt you, but they haven't asked forgiveness.
Yes.
Yeah. So, the question is, when is it more appropriate to extend forgiveness in person versus processing it privately?
Extend forgiveness.
Yeah, so somebody has wronged you.
I think you did a good job responding already.
I think it's really similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just did a whole thing, Everyday Forgiveness. You can go back a couple episodes, listen to that one. Yeah. We cover this particular topic in detail. So use it as a resource.
There's one more scripture we should read, though. I think in light of this, because this is a really good question. Mm-hmm. I mean, because that's what happens a lot of times. Somebody's hurt your feelings, but they don't even know they've hurt your mm-hmm. feelings. And you're carrying around this anger or resentment towards them. And if the person is saying, when do I go talk to them about it? And I think that that's a time where you just forgive them. Because in the Sermon on the Mount, it's the opposite. If you go to present your offering and you hear your brother has something against you, mm-hmm. go to your brother.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So that's clear. So if I'm, you know, going to worship the Lord and I know that you're bleeding and you've got something against me that's unresolved and I know about it, then I'm supposed to go do my best to be at peace with all men. So, but I think when the person doesn't know about it, but they have hurt you, that's when you just need to forgive
them. It's usually best. There are times to say, especially if the person who hurt you doesn't understand the language of forgiveness and mm-hmm. is a person burdened by a lot of shame, reactive shame, and you know that about them in your close relationship with them, I think there's a place to be able to say, when you're sure this is actually true, you're not trying to make a manipulative statement, to say, honey, just in case you wondered, we're good. I've forgiven you for, you know, that rough day you had. Mm. I mean, there's a gracious way of being able to relieve somebody of the burden.
Sure.
But I think
in marriage,
more
sure.
often it should be just quiet.
Yeah, I think we're talking about this. How close is the circle? Like in marriage, absolutely.
Marriage.
You know, those things need to be talked through. If the person's carrying around to hurt, you ought to be, you're one, so you ought to be able to, I think you ought to be able to say,
yes,
in a gracious way, that was really hurtful to me. And I might say, oh, I didn't even realize that you took it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think mm-hmm. there's that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about maybe a little broader one where mm-hmm. it's work related or relational or, you know, something that happened. Yeah. Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Second question. Good response, everyone. What are practical tips to help prioritize or rather reprioritize our marriage? So think of a couple, maybe their life has just happened, lots of kids. And then they go on to just ask, especially in seasons where kids, career, friends, etc. are demanding all of our attention. Mm-hmm. So how do you prioritize or reprioritize? I think it's great. A couple of things that come to my mind really quickly are it's always a dance. I think there's these seasons that mm-hmm. ebb and flow, this idea that your marriage is always, it's God and your marriage and your kids. Those are beautiful ideals, but in reality, sometimes your kids, especially in seasons of, that we've experienced of their health journey and different things like that, their needs take a front seat, you know, for a season. Now, it should never stay that way long term. You do need to prioritize or reprioritize. But I think to maybe just give fairness to this question, or just the reality is, I think you go in and out. Like, we have moments where, and not that we go in and out of our marriage, but as far as times where we have time more space spent. Just mm-hmm. practically, given the circumstances, to spend more time and be more close. And then there's other seasons where it's like, wow, there's just mm-hmm. a lot of demand. And we only have, you know, a handful of moments or interactions throughout the day. And we wish for more, but we also know that our marriage can sustain a period of time for that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really wise. You know, our generation, there were like, it was, you know, the home started falling apart, divorce started mm-hmm. getting rampant. So you hear a lot of sermons like, your priorities have to be right. God first, family second, mm-hmm. work third.
Yep.
But it's not that
it's
neat.
Not,
it's
no.
it's a circle. And at times your job mm-hmm. might take you away for a couple of weeks. The yep. problem is if you just stay there and become a workaholic, then it's a problem. Mm. Or you only focus point. On your kids and you ignore your marriage. Mm-hmm. So I love how you answered that question. I think that's true. And then like when Birdie got sick, mm. oh, it yeah. couldn't be all about you having a romantic 2-week vacation. It had to be no. saving Birdie's life. And yeah. so I feel like that it's seasons. Yeah. But the only thing I would say, since we're in the later season and still in love, is to the young couples that listen to this podcast, and it's mostly young couples, it will be just the two of you one day. Mm. And so
good reminder.
Find the time to keep your relationship mm. romantic mm. over the years to whatever degree you can, and don't mm. let everything else suck you dry. Yeah. And, you know, certain things can be controlled. You can't do everything. Yeah. And so, like you're the one that I think I first heard say, to every yes, there's a corresponding no, you know, yeah. that whole yeah. thing. So that's where friends come in. Like, you know, I mean, we have so many people we could be friends with, but I mean, all our years and churches in ministry, and friendships, yeah. like people I'd love to hang out with that I haven't seen for years because mm. it was when we were in California ministering. And so you can't be friends with everybody. That's why yeah. we have eternity.
Yeah.
But marriage is important.
Oh, I would just add to that is sometimes it's just a degree. We just need, our marriage needs just a little bit more time and mm-hmm. attention. So mm-hmm. what can we do? Is there a habit that we can stack into our lives that will just make sure that we're connecting more often? It doesn't yes. need to always be so drastic that you need to spend hundreds of dollars to go on a date every week.
Yeah. yeah.
There were very few years of our life where we got a regular date.
Yeah.
But there are other ways you can find just by a little degree. You need a little more attention. You need to leave your phone, you know, yes. during your time that you have together, leave your phone someplace else.
Absolutely.
Just those little attentiveness things, I think, add up.
Mm, yeah. Big time.
And I think even in the really full seasons where, like you're talking about, where the balance has to shift a little bit, we can go a long way by just communicating well with each other, that mm-hmm. that our desire is for each other mm-hmm. and that yeah. we yeah. even though we're not spending as much time or having as much time to talk and connect, just reminding each other that we have the same shared desire goes a long way in keeping you connected even when you're not yeah. able to spend time just trying to build up your marriage.
I completely agree. And right? I think it's also just in seasons. As much as you can plan ahead if you can. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
there's yes. nothing more. I mean, it's in multiple ways, is it satisfying and encouraging when you have a date on the calendar
yes.
that you know is for you guys. Both the anticipation and the trip are both a blessing. Just to mm-hmm. know like that it's coming, the excitement sure. is a huge part of that, yeah. as well as the trip. So I'd say, even if it's a trip to a hotel or if it's a trip to just get away for a day, like, planning that yeah. I think can go a long way.
You know, this might be a good place to say what I think we said at the marriage retreat, that somebody said it at some point. I think you said it, Brooke, but we've all said it. The way I like to say it is, the best gift you can give your kids after leading them to Jesus is the gift of a good marriage. Mm. So you're actually helping your kids mm-hmm. by keeping your marriage strong
yeah.
to just give them everything, to where you're at each other's throats because you haven't even really had a meaningful conversation mm-hmm. and you're both tired. You think the other one should be doing more. That's not going to help your kids at all. So I think that right. that's another way of looking at it.
Let's talk about, let's switch to disagreements because, well, we all have them. How do you handle, disagreements about activities, therapies, et cetera, that your kids should be involved in? I love that that one word gives away that type of person pretty quick, that you should be. I love that phrase, stop shoulding yourself.
Yes.
I think that's a great, great phrase. But yeah, how do you handle those disagreements about activities, therapies, et cetera, that they should be involved in? I think that's you guys have talked a lot. We've had whole episodes about it, goals versus values. You know, like there's goals and then there's values. Values can change. Your overall goal needs to stay the same. Following Jesus, the foundation, those are the foundational things, but values can change. I mean, this is interesting. How do we handle those disagreements? I think the better question might be, or more clarifying question might be, how do you agree on the activities and the therapies and the things that your kids should be involved with? And I think it's really multifaceted. Like, I'm thinking about the therapies for our kids. Like, I have three different times per week on my calendar for therapies for our kids or for us or for different things, like things that I'm at that I need to be at. We've been able to identify that if we're doing therapy with Birdie, for example, on different health things or different developmental cognitive things, it doesn't work if I'm not there. So we've had to agree, not only does she need these therapies, but I have to make space and time within my life and week and work to be there because it's actually super imperative for us to stay on the same page.
But that's more recent. We didn't always do it that way.
We did it from failure. Yeah, we did it the wrong way first. So
the reason we do it that way now is because it was creating so much tension in our marriage. Because yes, it would be me who leans towards being critical and controlling. It would be me doing all the therapies, telling him all the things we need to be doing at home, and then being frustrated that he wasn't 100% on board. And we just learned through a lot of failure that doing it together removes all of that tension because there's a third party. We're both seeing it. We're both agreeing. Yeah, we agree with what this therapist is saying. But I think there are lots of times, I would say overall, we are on the same page with the different activities and the different therapies, but we have lots of conversation and tension around usually me feeling like we can fit in one more. I can see that this would be good. And him saying, whoa, 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 we do not have capacity for that. You don't have capacity for that. And it creates tension. And I think if you're not in agreement about those things, you have to slow way down.
Yeah.
And really learn to hear each other with being willing to change your mind. And coming to a place of agreement, even if it's just for a season, and remembering, hey, we did agree upon this, that we would try it for X amount of time. But you have to slow down until you both agree because it doesn't work. And again, learn from our failure of one. If one of you is driving it and pushing it through, we can do it. We got to do it. It's the right thing to do. And the other's resistant, it just doesn't work.
We want to let you know about a new offering, a 31-day prayer devotional entitled Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth. This book was born out of desperation. I didn't know how to lead my kids spiritually, so I started praying honest, dependent, daily prayers. Jeremiah 29:12 says, "Then you will call on me," God says, "and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you." If you want to learn more, head to intentionalparents.org. And if you partner with us at $25 a month or more, we'd love to send you a copy as a thank you. Well, can I just highlight, maybe I totally agree, but just to clarify, even looking at this question again, certain activities, the question also becomes, what activities should your kids be in? I think our world, if you're looking at culture, has that really mixed up. Mm-hmm. I think the amount of stuff that culture says your kids should be in is way too much for their mental, emotional, spiritual health, as well as your own family. Yeah. Because when every Saturday and Sunday, your calendar is literally filled with driving all over town, dropping them off at all sorts of things, and you guys never have a moment as a family to just be, that's a sheer sign that that's too much activity for flourishing. Now, can you do it? Sure. Can you do it for a season? Sure. But are you going to experience life? Probably not. Yeah. You're not. But, and how do you agree on that? Well, I think you have to get to a spot where you go back to those values. Like, well, do we value rest? Do we value family time? If we do, then maybe they're just going to do soccer one time. I mean, none of our kids, Birdie's done soccer. Duke did soccer once. Scarlett's done some gymnastics. We're not great examples of this because
I think none of us really care.
Because we're not in that space of like, you know, highlighting that our kids need to be in sports because we think there's a value to it for sure. But also we're not going to shove them into sports if they're like not interested in them.
But we're really good friends with another family where he was in the NFL for a lot of years and sports is a huge part of their family's life. They own like a sports conditioning center. And the whole family does sports together.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
What you're saying right there, that's a great example. Exactly. Yeah. And that is a different situation.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, highlighting those two parents are very unified in the fact that they're all on board.
She's doing a good job of helping us not be in trouble with our friends.
Rhythm. No,
I'm
just
not
saying,
ripping on sports.
All I'm trying to highlight is this can look different for every family. I'm thinking of the Brock family. Their boys got into football, so the whole family got into football. Yes. And they made like a party. They're a walking party everywhere they go anyway, but they made a party out of Friday night football games.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a way, if you're both in agreement, you can make a lot of activities work. Well, but if you're not...
I wasn't dogging sports. I was trying to highlight and say that if one of these things, if you have to define what's life-giving for your family. Some 100%. People might go like Saturdays on the field, and our whole family there, it for us, it's our bonding time. We feel great. Like
it is not that for us.
That's not that for us, as you could probably pick up very easily. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's nothing wrong with that. It's just making sure that you both are agreeing on those activities and that they're bringing life. And the moment they start taking away from your family, I would slow down and say, how do we?
And that you agree.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. Which means one of you has to submit, defer, whatever word you prefer. I know submit is bad. The bad word, but one of you is going to have to give way.
Yeah.
And and it shouldn't be like my way or your way. It should be after much discussion about the reasons why and what the needs, personal needs and needs of the period of time, that stage of time you're in.
Yeah.
And lots of conversation until you actually agree, not until you actually just convince your spouse that your way is the better way.
Yeah.
But actually agree and give space. And I think you should be watching that there, how much you're dominating, how often my particular values are dominating or your spouse's values are dominating, because neither of us want it. You don't want to do that. Yeah. Nobody wants to be in that relationship.
You're right.
Yeah, know, I was at the Intentional Marriage Retreat and there was this couple teaching. Oh, I think their names are Brooke and Elizabeth. and I think one of them said communication should be clear.
Oh, yeah.
Understood and agreed upon.
Expectations.
Yes.
Clear, spoken, and agreed upon.
Clear, spoken, and agreed upon.
Yeah, that's not an original thought to me.
Okay, but that's okay. But that's really important, you know. Communication is important. So I love what you just said, Diane. And so— yes, the person might have to give in, but the other, he might be able to win the person over. I think that's the goal, is that you get on the same page and stay on the same page, whether it's sports or anything else.
Well, genius is knowing how to hide your sources. That's the definition of genius, knowing how to hide your sources. I know John Mark told me that a long, 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 long time ago, which has always made me wonder, who is he ripping off that I can't figure out? But I know they're there. Anyway, I think, but that's on expectations, that specific pattern. That's so true. And we have a lot of those moments too, where I do have expectations sometimes, but I think a lot of the times I'm not always aware. And then all of a sudden you're just like, well, you're like mad about something. And
on the ripping off the sources thing.
Yeah.
There's nothing new under the sun, the Bible says.
It's Ecclesiastes.
Anything new, it's been said before. It might have said differently. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
None of us.
So we're all learning and we're all growing and we're learning from each other. All right.
Okay. One more question. Do you want to pick the last one?
Yeah. Scroll down, because there was a really good one.
That's as far as
it goes. No, I mean up.
Oh, you mean opposite of what you said? See, I had this expectation that you meant what you said. This one. Which one? This one?
It's kind of heavy. Tell me if you're up for it. Leave it to me to pick the heavy ones. You can pick a different one.
This is an obese question. How would you? Yeah.
Or maybe it should be a whole podcast episode. You decide right now in the moment.
No, I think we can. Well, how about this? Why don't we get into it? And if we're like, hey, there's more, we'll develop it more. How would you advise bringing our kids into our broken family stories? to help them understand so much about ourselves and our family dynamic. Mindful of those relatives still alive and a part of the continued interactions.
Oh, and that's a common problem. Maybe, yes. Maybe nobody escapes that one.
Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to my next door neighbor about this, who's not a believer, navigating this very thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a wisdom issue.
Yeah.
And a timing issue. I mean, your story with your family of origin, and when do you talk to your kids about it and to what extent?
Absolutely.
At what age?
We're navigating this in real time.
Yeah, you're navigating it in real time. I know Jamark and Tammy have navigated it with Sunday, their daughter's story of, you know, her adoption from Uganda. And, yeah.
I think, how would you advise bringing your kids? I think, you have to identify what is the story? What can they handle? Meaning emotionally, what are you asking them to hold and carry? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't understand the emotional mental load that we're putting on our young kids by telling them information. Mm-hmm. So you need to advise, like, where are they mentally, emotionally? What kind of, you know, kid are they? Also, you need to evaluate, like, they have siblings. So if you're talking to an older one, expecting them not to talk to a younger one, that's a lot to ask of your kids. Yeah. And I would advise personally, that's too much of a thing to put on your kids to have to never to hold that to. I think it creates a lot of interesting dynamics. So I would, the couple things that come to my mind right away are like age, appropriateness, and a lot of prayer. Like, when is the right moment? Because with certain things, you don't want to keep them too long because it could feel like deception. Like, how come you didn't tell me this earlier, you know? Yeah. At the same time, you can't overshare, or you don't want to overshare because that could also just impact them in a deep way of those relatives, like they said, that are still alive. And how do you, like, help them interact in a way that's still, like, I'm going to see them again. So you have to, like.
To me, that one is the necessary part. So is it true? Is it kind? Is it clear? But is it necessary?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's really not necessary right now. They could handle it, but it would hurt this other person, and maybe now's not the time, or maybe it's not necessary right now.
Yeah.
So that's why I think there's so much wisdom here, depending, and that's where counsel can come in if you're not sure.
Yeah.
You got to talk to somebody older, wiser, you know, in abundance of counselors. So if it's a real sensitive issue and you can't figure it out on your own with your spouse even, that's when, you know.
But also, maybe asking, is it affecting them right now?
Yeah.
I do remember having some conversations with you kids at a point in time where one of our extended family members' way of being was hurting you and bringing up big emotions in you. Well, that's a good time to start talking about some of those things.
Yeah.
In as gentle and non-judgmental way as possible and letting your child talk back to you. And say, this is how it's affecting me, because your number one responsibility is to your child, not to your extended family.
Yeah.
And child comes first. That's and not that your children only have to be around people who just lovey, lovey, dovey, dovey, everything they say. Mm. You know, being able to see the real world can be really harsh, but being there with them to intervene when necessary can cause a lot of conflict in families, but your kids come first. Mm. Yeah. Their well-being.
Absolutely.
And I think at least from our experience and as it's unfolded with our kids, I feel more than anything that our kids have kind of set the pace and the timing. Meaning, kids are incredibly intuitive. They pick up on way more than we realize. And there have been so many instances where just driving in the car or random, you know, in passing questions or comments that have spurred kind of the next layer of conversation and then the next layer brought up very organically, always initiated by them. I think it actually ends up being a lot less about, okay, now I feel like you're ready, so I'm going to sit down and I'm going to explain this part of the story to you. So often it's just they ask a curious question and you answer it to the best of your ability at the, you know, age appropriateness at the time. And then you wait, might be a year later where they ask another question. Mm-hmm. That at least for us has been how most of it has unfolded. But I will say one thing that I think we do, especially I do, I think you do it too, really intentionally, is because our family, we talked about this on another episode, that deeply in the Comer line is some judgment and criticism. Mm-hmm.
Tell me more.
We naturally lean that way, and I see it in my kids, mm-hmm. and because I see it in myself.
Oh, that's so funny.
And
yeah, we do.
So I'm constantly talking to them, usually when they're complaining about somebody or judging somebody, reminding them of like, hey, there's a reason that person is like that. Mm-hmm. There's something there. There's a story there. There's yeah. a, you know, oftentimes when they're noticing it with peers, oftentimes it's a, they have an absent yeah. parent or they, we so all, just yeah, kind of always back. Bringing them back to, there are, I think, few truly evil-hearted, yes. ill-willed people.
Yes.
But there are a lot of wounded people.
Yes.
Living out of their wounds, unaware mm-hmm. of how they're acting and mm-hmm. how they're hurting people because they're mm-hmm. in so much pain and sitting yes. in so much shame themselves. What and is, so if we can build a framework yeah. when they're really young,
amazing.
Where they understand yes. that, you're setting the stage for when those some of those deeper conversations
yes.
need to happen mm-hmm. And they're connecting it to people they love. Mm-hmm. The other thing, and this is an observation. This is not a lived experience for me, so you speak into it. But this is what I was talking with my neighbor about two nights ago, where she came from alcoholic parents, and everybody in the family is an alcoholic except for her, and she has a little boy. And she overheard her son telling our girls, yeah, I just have one grandma. And she said, my heart sank because he actually has two grandmas and two grandpas, right. but none of them are a part of his life. And she was noticing, I felt, you know, knife to the heart when he said that, but yeah. he's perfectly fine. And so oftentimes we have our own wounds from our dysfunctional families, you know, mm-hmm. and we're expecting things to hit our kids much deeper than they're going to, but to mm-hmm. them, they're not as deeply connected
yes.
to the dysfunction yeah. and the wound.
They're one generation yeah. removed.
So yeah. them hearing the story is going to be felt different than you telling the story.
Yeah.
Again, that's more of an observation than my own lived experience. You could speak to that maybe more.
Yeah, you're talking about the part of like not getting something.
Like you carry certain hurts that our kids are not going to carry as you explain stories.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Sure, absolutely. And we're in real time. To the truth of this whole situation, we recently just talked to our older kids because there's a big enough age gap and they are old enough. We weren't asking one kid to hold it. We were asking two kids to understand because they have the emotional maturity to understand. Told them parts of my upbringing and it was so cool to see their response was, oh, it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay. For them, it was connecting 100 dots that mm-hmm. they couldn't uh-huh. connect before. And it was great. It was actually so helpful even just, you know, sharing with them because, you know, the things I was sharing weren't directly with me alone. It was just like kind of culture, environment, different things that happened growing up. And so it just for them were like, oh, that makes so much sense. Oh, thank you. Like almost thank you.
Almost thank you.
And
yeah.
like,
yeah.
okay, cool.
But that moment had been building for 10 years.
Sure. Well, and we knew and I knew. I was like, well, this is going to be a matter of time. But I also, you know, we had to read the moment for a long time. And I don't think, the hard part about this is like Phil, you said earlier, this is a wisdom issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We don't know when it actually is. I think it has to be slow. You will never regret going too slow. You will always regret going mm-hmm. too fast. So if you're like, we're right on the edge. Is it too soon? Just wait. I mean, like there's no harm in just waiting a little bit to see if that's going to be something that changes. So
I have a verse for that.
Sure.
It took me a second to find it, but this is where Proverbs is so helpful for its wisdom for life. Proverbs 25 beginning, is just verse 11. Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances, in its circumstances. So that's what you're talking about. You decided with Duke and Scarlett, it's the right circumstances now to share this nugget of information, which was a hard thing to hear, but it's not the right circumstance for Bertie and Sloan at all. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important, Proverbs 25:11. Mm-hmm. And that's where the wisdom comes in, mm-hmm. to know the difference.
Love that. So wherever you're at in your marriage, wherever you're at in your parenting journey, thank you for depositing these questions. You can always go send questions. You can connect with us on social media, Instagram at intentional_parents. You can send an email to hello@intentionalparents.org. Send any question you have there. If you're at any of our events, we always have a number that you can text, you know, questions to. So take advantage of that. But thank you for sending your questions. Keep doing it, and we will keep responding.